This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. A little later in the show, we'll be talking about tax reform that helps the family with Senator Mike Lee, as well as a look at an op-ed by Jerry Beer in the Wall Street Journal about the Southern Poverty Law Center. But first, last weekend we hosted our 12th annual Values Voter Summit, and President Donald Trump spoke for the second year in a row. Here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins to talk about the president's visit.
All right, another Values Voter Summit is now in the books. Nearly 2,000 conservatives gathered for the 12th annual event at the Omni Shoreham Hotel in Washington, D.C. this past weekend, hearing from top lawmakers, including the Commander-in-Chief himself, President Donald Trump. We played a little bit of that on Friday, but that was just the warm-up. I mean, we had Todd Starnes was there. He was outstanding. Everybody was great. It was just a great lineup. And then we finished yesterday morning with a worship time, and then I brought a message from Philippians chapter 1. But just a great time for conservatives to be together to encourage one another, to have breakout sessions on different issues, and frankly, just drive the liberal media crazy. A lot of press from the event, and they were just beside themselves that the president came and spoke as he did. In fact, I want you to hear, these are just a really encourage you to go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over, and watch all of this. But here are just a few clips from the president's speech at the Values Voter Summit. Listen to this.
We protect religious liberty. Religious liberty is enshrined in the very First Amendment of the Bill of Rights. And we all pledge allegiance to very, very beautifully, one nation under God. We are stopping cold the attacks on Judeo-Christian values. And something I said so much during the last 2 years, you know, we're getting near that beautiful Christmas season that people don't talk about anymore. They don't use the word Christmas because it's not politically correct. You go to department stores and they'll say Happy New Year and they'll say other things and it'll be red. They'll have it painted, but they don't say, well, guess what? We're saying Merry Christmas again. We know that it's the family and the church, not government officials, that know best how to create strong and loving communities. And above all else, we know this in America, we don't worship government, we worship God.
Well, for those that heard the president's speech on Friday morning, they didn't have to get their workout earlier in the day because they were up and down on their feet. The president receiving an extremely enthusiastic welcome. And it was interesting. I did a number of interviews with the press after that. And you know, people say, well, why are they so excited to see the president? Well, number one, he is the president. Number two, is that unlike others that in the past, and I'm including Republicans in that, that this president has actually followed through on the promises that he made on the campaign trail. He promised that, I mean, you remember, we've talked about this before, but the third and final presidential debate that was in Las Vegas, I was in the audience, and I was, when the president went into challenging Hillary Clinton on late-term abortion, and the words that he used, which were his own, they were not scripted, it at that point I knew that he had locked in the support of the pro-life community. Within 72 hours of taking office, he not only reinstituted the Mexico City policy, which prohibits taxpayers from being forced to fund abortion overseas, but he expanded it, taking it from you know, roughly covering programs that equaled about, I don't know, a little over $500 million to now covering several billion dollars in expenditures. So he's done that. He sent out a message 2 weeks ago when the House was dealing with the 20-week pain bill, the five-month pain bill is really what it is, stating that he would support it. The White House stating that the president, as the policy is, would support it. He's been very clear in that, saying that he would appoint pro-life justices, and he has. So the president has been keeping his promises. He's been protecting religious liberty, issuing the executive order. Then a week ago this past Friday, the guidance from the Department of Justice. So people were receptive to the fact that he's been doing what he said he was going to do. And then it was interesting. Several asked me, what does he mean by Merry Christmas? Let's see. Be jovial? Be happy? No. What do you mean? I mean, it was like this was some kind of code word that he was communicating to these social conservatives, and they were, you know, they were getting out their, you know, their 1975 cereal boxes to see if they could decode the message. Yeah, I said, yeah, it is code. He's actually signaling to conservatives it's time to take over the country. Then look, it's real simple. He is saying that, look, we don't have to hide our faith anymore. If you're a Christian, feel free to say Merry Christmas. Feel free to share your faith. Feel free to live your life according to your faith. That's why this president is getting so much support. Now, I've seen some on the right who were never Trumpers who are saying, you know, I don't see how you can support this guy. How could you invite him to come to the Values Voter Summit? Well, I mean, I'm looking at his policies that he has initiated since he took office. I've not seen a president do this in my lifetime. Not the way he has. So I would suggest to the never Trumpers that, I would ask him a question. What are you looking for? What would it take for you to be supportive of a president that's doing the things we've actually asked him to do, to protect religious freedom, to help further a culture of life, and to end taxpayers' forced partnership with it? And what do you want? I mean, I think we have to be very careful that, and I've been clear with my conversations with the White House, if they're right, we're with them, and we'll support them. If they're wrong, we're not going to support them. It's that simple. We're focused on the policies. Anyway, the president did a great job. And I think he even broke some new ground in terms of, he said, you know, he made a clear contrast with what was yesterday in terms of the hostility toward religious freedom in America and what is a new day. So it was a great speech. And again, I would encourage you to take a look at the whole thing.
You can find out more about all of the topics we cover here on Washington Watch when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues of the day. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with a look at the Southern Poverty Law Center.
We've gone from give me liberty or give me death to take care of me, please. What has happened to the American spirit? Our colleges were once bastions of free speech. Now they're bastions of speech codes. In a talk about his new book, Not a Daycare, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, takes a hard look at what's happening around the country, including the demand for safe spaces and trigger warnings at universities like Yale, Brandeis, and Oberlin. Go to frc.org/speakers to watch.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. The Southern Poverty Law Center has a bad habit of labeling as a hate group anybody they don't agree with, including Family Research Council. Last week, Jerry Beer wrote an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal called Fake News from the SPLC, and he joined Tony Perkins by phone to talk about it.
Jerry, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you.
You investigated this fire in Mississippi in relation to SPLC's reporting. What did you find?
Well, my interest in it, I simply ran across the report that they had issued after about 3 weeks after the election last year. This 10 days after harassment and hate in the aftermath of the election. And just out of curiosity, I looked up some of the names that were mentioned in the report, and found that 3 weeks after this report had been issued by the SPLC, someone had been arrested for the crime, but it was a member of the church. And the police did not believe that the church had actually been spray-painted with Vote Trump and completely destroyed in the fire. But their investigation led them to this man who was a member of that church. He's been indicted since and is awaiting a trial date, but they still don't have a motive behind it. But obviously, it was not what it originally appeared.
Now, in the course of the investigation, as the AP had reported, the fire marshal did not think it was politically motivated. Was there any point in which the law enforcement official suggested that this was racially motivated, politically motivated?
Not that I could find. That seemed to be the characterization to begin with when the fire first happened. It was covered quite extensively a week before the election, and there was speculation by the mayor of Greenville, who was of course upset, saying this is the kind of thing that used to happen back in the 50s and 60s, but not these days. The thing that I found most disturbing about it, I guess, is that in all the time since the report came out, and then 3 weeks afterwards when this man was arrested, his arrest was covered very extensively in the media by, the major papers, the Post, the New York Times, all the networks. And yet during the 9 months that followed, this report remained out there by the SPLC. They continued to promote it. Just as recently as the 25th of September, they tweeted out a link to it that contained the original assertion that this had been attackers who were trying to engage in voter intimidation. And yet the Post itself had reported on this, and yet the Washington Post still hosts a copy of the original uncorrected report on their own website. And since the media is so inclined to refer to the Southern Poverty Law Center, this is actually their main thing. I mean, they've mm-hmm. gotten a lot of attention lately because of going after groups like yours and others. But this is the thing that they are supposed to really keep on top of. And yet somehow in the 9 months after their report, this anecdote is what they opened their report with. So it's not like it was buried somewhere in the details. This was the main thing they were using to show that there was this, this outbreak of hate based on the election. And it just, within hours after I contacted them last week, they had posted a correction to it. So it's not like they couldn't do it. It was just...
It doesn't fit the narrative that they want to create.
Correct. And again, as I say, most of what they report on is reported to them by their own supporters or their own people who look up these news stories. But again, did no one report this in 9 months, or did they just not think it was worth correcting, especially since they let off the report with that anecdote?
Do they not subscribe to any of the national newspapers?
One wonders, but the media doesn't, as I said, this was published, my op-ed was published last Thursday, and yet the Washington Post themselves have not corrected their version of the report. They mm-hmm. still link to it on their site as, this report of hate surrounding the election.
Well, Jerry Beer, let me ask you a question. If I mean, look, the Southern Poverty Law Center has every right to exist. I mean, anybody
right.
can exist, and they can create their own platform, and they can speak. But they're supposed to be an arbiter, like a repository of this information. And it sounds like more they're trying to lead the narrative than report the narrative. I mean, they're not. If even law enforcement officials were saying they didn't think this was politically motivated, but yet they run out and use this as, the sky is falling. This is what's going to be happening. And they don't bother to check the facts. That's troubling.
It is. And in some ways, I don't blame them specifically for pushing the side that backs their narrative because, certainly a lot of groups, trumpet the things that support their main cause.
Right.
But it is the, just this past few days, I think it was, that Newsweek headlined, President Trump is the first president to address a hate group. And they didn't even have hate group in quotes. And yet it was the Southern Poverty Law Center's characterization that they used in their headline.
Right, right. And they can't get the facts straight on what is supposed to be their bread and butter.
Correct.
On issues like this. Jerry Beer, thanks so much for joining us. Very interesting piece. I'm going to encourage people to take a look at it. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
You can find out more about Jerry Beer and his op-ed when you visit tonyperkins.com. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, helping you stay informed on the issues that matter to you. You can donate when you visit tonyperkins.com. When we come back, Utah Senator Mike Lee.
In a free country such as ours, it's easy to forget that slavery still exists. Human beings are being trafficked and sold for sex against their will. Human trafficking is a horrifying scourge that continues to haunt America, particularly through the proliferation of illegal online transactions between traffickers and buyers. As part of the FRC Speaker Series, Congresswoman Ann Wagner discusses congressional anti-human trafficking initiatives and how the conservative community can best be engaged in combating this horrific crime. Watch this discussion at frc.org/speakers.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Tax reform is front and center these days for President Trump and many Republican members of Congress. One tax reform idea under consideration is the proposal to expand the child tax credit. Joining Tony to talk about this proposal is Utah Senator Mike Lee.
Senator Lee, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much, Tony. It's good to be with you.
So you've got some good news, the Senate advancing a concept that could leave more money in the pockets of families?
Yes, that's right. If there's any single group of people whose equal opportunity to pursue happiness, we should make sure to protect. It needs to be our ultimate entrepreneurial and investor class, which is America's moms and dads. The family is the most important institution in our society. It's the fundamental unit of our society and our economy. You know, this is really an incubator of economic opportunity. It is one of the best indicators of economic success, and it's becoming more socially and economically important every single day. But unfortunately, the current tax code singles out parents of young children and unfairly double taxes them. This is what I call the parent tax penalty. It's a glitch in the federal tax code that requires parents to contribute to senior entitlement programs not once, but twice. So my idea for increasing the child tax credit is really a solution to this penalty, and this would do a lot to alleviate burdens on America's working class families.
So what are you proposing in terms of dollar amount?
What I think we ought to do is take it up to about $2,000 per child. That, in the context of this larger framework that we're looking at, would provide real meaningful relief. It would start to level the playing field to treat all taxpayers more fairly. For a working-class family, this would mean an immediate, potentially life-changing reform. More money in the pockets of America's moms and dads.
So when you talk about it as being refundable, now we're talking, this is a doubling. It's currently at $1,000, so we're talking about doubling up to $2,000 and being refundable. That means that how in terms of being refundable, it would be those that would not even have that liability would get that that tax?
Yes. Now, I want to be clear here. What I mean is that it would be refundable up to the amount of total taxes paid by the taxpayer and total payroll taxes withheld by the employer. So there are those families out there, those working moms and dads, mm-hmm. who make a low enough salary that they're not actually paying federal income tax. But still, there is tax withheld on their behalf on the okay. part of their employer and the part of payroll tax, and this would be refundable up to the level of that tax.
And that's one that's a dollar for dollar, so it's refundable. It's not a percentage. It's refundable for the taxes withheld from their payroll.
Yes, exactly. And so the point there is that this is there for those who are working, those who are actually contributing to the system.
And that can be very significant.
For nothing, but this really is money that's coming out of the bottom line of workers. And you're right, that really could be something, and it would be.
And the reason, Senator Lee, that I think we focus on this, in fact, this concept was an idea that we put forth in the 90s and it kept going until finally it was adopted by Congress, put in place. And now we're looking to expand it to keep up with the inflation and everything else. But these are future taxpayers. These are future workers. And so we want to encourage families that are having children that are going to be the future economic drivers of our country.
That's right. We have to remember that because our senior entitlement programs, Social Security and Medicare, operate on a pay-as-you-go basis, today's children are tomorrow's workers, and they will be funding the Social Security and Medicare benefits of today's workers who are tomorrow's retirees. That's why when a married couple who has children, as they're incurring hundreds of thousands of dollars in child-rearing expenses, they're doing more than just investing in their own family. They're also investing in the stability of Social Security and Medicare. But our current tax code doesn't take that into account, and it should.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Thursday afternoon. Senator Mike Lee of Utah, my guest, talking about a provision that is, in fact, just advanced by a bipartisan vote in the Senate that would add this to tax reform, and that being a refundable tax credit against payroll taxes for families with children, almost about a doubling of that $1,000 tax credit. So what's the next step?
Well, the next step is for us to get this budget passed. That's what we're debating right now. The budget will in turn set up the mechanism whereby we can pass a tax cut, the tax reform package, within the next few weeks. And this is an important step toward doing that today.
And important because as this gets into the budget, then when reconciliation occurs, it's very easy to make the argument it should be in there.
Yes, exactly. It should be, and I believe it will be.
What's the time frame? When can Americans potentially look to see some type of benefit from this?
Well, the next big time horizon is just when we get it passed. But I believe they could see some real benefit from this within the next few months if we get this passed within the next few weeks.
Do you think we will see tax reform by the end of the year?
I do, because I believe Republicans in the Senate and in the House of Representatives understand if we don't get this done, we're in a lot of trouble. And that's a real important motivator. There are lots of motivators in life. Fear is one of them. And we have reason to be fearful of what will happen when our constituents see us failing to do this, which is why we can't fail.
I think that's absolutely right. When you look at the Obamacare repeal and replace that didn't make it through, that was a key promise. And this is the next one in line, and I think you're absolutely right. I think the Republicans, the administration, needs to be able to deliver something of substance, not just window dressing, but some true significant tax reform. And I know they're talking about that in the House. I've spoken to several House members. Do you think it's going to be substantive?
I do. No, I think it'll be substantive, and I think it'll happen. You know, to paraphrase something that Winston Churchill said of the American people, I would say here that the United States Senate can be counted on to do the right thing after it has exhausted every other alternative. And I therefore think we'll pass something, and I think it'll be substantive. I think it will result in American families having more take-home pay, more disposable income, and I think that will also generate more economic growth, which will in turn lead to opportunities for America's middle class.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is the micro and the macro. The macro is this is going to grow the economy, but it's going to take a while for that to really see the effect of that. I mean, there'll be an initial push as more businesses choose to expand, but their true economic growth is going to be a few years down the road. But the micro, in terms of the impact upon families with policies like this, could be immediate.
Yes, that's right. And this is one of those policies that, if implemented, would bring about very speedy relief. It would result in the improvement of situations for American families very, very quickly.
Senator Lee, you and I haven't actually spoken about this in a few months. Last time we talked, we were discussing some of the nominees, and clearly because you're on the Senate Judiciary Committee, you're much closer to this than I am. But in my conversations with the White House and looking at their nominees, I think this is one of the areas where they have absolutely gotten it right with their judicial nominees. They've made some stellar picks.
Oh, they have. Look, Justice Gorsuch is an extraordinary pick. We've had some really good other judges coming through the lower courts. We had a hearing just this week for Greg Katsas, who's been appointed to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. He's an outstanding lawyer. I've known him and known of him for many years, and it's very fortunate that the Trump administration has gone out of its way to make sure that we're getting people like this interested in being federal judges and then in nominating them.
And hopefully we'll get them through the process quickly, because basically they put their lives on hold during this period, and that can be very frustrating for those who have been nominated.
Yeah, it can be frustrating. It can be invasive. It can put in jeopardy all kinds of things in their lives, not to mention their own sanity. That's why I salute them, but we need to do more than just salute them. We need to make sure they get confirmed.
Absolutely. Senator Mike Lee, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon, and thank you for advancing that child tax credit expansion. Overdue, needed, and essential.
Thank you, Tony.
If you want to find out more about Senator Mike Lee, just head on over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to TonyPerkins.com and clicking on the donate button. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.